We're going to share bread and wine together in a few moments, and I think most of you know how we do this. For those of you who want to stay in your seats and be served, that's fine. We can do that, and hopefully we'll catch up with you. But if you wave your hand around, we'll be able to serve you bread and wine and bring it to you. But I'd like to think that most of us will be able to mix and mingle and pray with one another. And do you know what? You don't just have to stick to one piece of bread. It's okay. It's okay. There is nothing in the Bible that says you can only have one little piece of bread and one little shot of wine. All right? So we can be liberal and lavish with this. Did the word liberal crop up there? I have to be careful with that one. Right, here we go. So just a little thought just to bring you into that zone. We're coming up towards Advent. Advent is the time of preparation. Preparing for the coming, in this case, the coming of the King, and Advent is approaching. So, here we go. Oh, that's slipped forward a bit. Any Star Trek fans? Yes, Jim, this is for you. This is for you. All right, okay. Yeah, I went to church and I learned about Star Trek. There we go, fair enough then. So, there's one of the Star Trek movies out there which is called First Contact. I'm not trying to say that church is about science fiction, okay? Just to get that out there, it isn't. But this film, First Contact, is all about an encounter. It's about an encounter that changes in the storyline of the film. It changes humankind's view of themselves, the world, the universe that they're in. Because first contact means that first contact with an alien species, and suddenly they realize they're not alone in the universe. And of course, in this case, first contact was with Vulcans. It had to be, didn't it? Mr. Spock's forebears and all that kind of stuff. And everything changes. Conjecture about what's out there, what's our place in all of this, suddenly theory becomes, there's a whole new reality, a whole new thing for people to get their heads round. A new truth, if you like, to be processed. And out of that comes all sorts of issues around relationship, communication, encounter, discovery, how do we interact with these new beings that we've suddenly realized have been around us all the time. The world had changed, and that's fiction, okay? That's fiction. However, Advent is the season that leads to us remembering a real truth. I think my volume's just dropped off then. Do you want me to switch to another mic? No, we're okay. Advent is a season that looks to a truth in our world, in our lives, something that has happened, an encounter with God. Something changed. God stepped into our world. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, tabernacled among us. This is the incarnation. That's the big word for it. God taking on flesh and coming among us. And according to traditional church calendars, the season of Advent begins next Sunday, first Sunday of Advent, and you have four Sundays before Christmas Day. That's how we usually do it. That's when we start lighting the Advent candles on Sunday, and we'll be doing that the first one next week. And it's a time of preparation. However, in the old Celtic Christian tradition, Advent begins on the 15th of November. Did you know that? Earlier, yeah, it begins on the 15th of November. And my wife has got Celtic blood in her, apparently, so there we go. And begins on the 15th, because the Celts wanted 40 days to prepare for the coming of the King. And they kind of thought of it in similar terms to Easter and Lent. The King is coming. The King is coming. And they wanted to prepare properly. 40 in the Bible is a very significant number. And if you want to do a little Bible study this afternoon, look up the number 40 and you'll find it's all about times of preparation before God. It's a key number. It's actually on my mind next year probably starting sometime in January, that we ought to do as a church 40 days of preparation. I've got a real sense that something's coming our way. Yesterday in the Lego Club, and I'm going off script now, but we were packed out again. If we want more space, and if we believe God is going to give us more space, we need to get on our knees and prepare. Preparation. 40 days. What's wrong with 40 days of praying? I'm not asking you to give up your jobs or anything like that, but how can we fit prayer in 40 days to prepare for something? Because it's special, because God's given it to us. That kind of stuff. The Celtic view of this preparation period, the preparation for the arrival of Jesus, dwells on kind of three themes of arrival. The first coming of Jesus, the incarnation, baby Jesus there, that whole nativity thing, the incarnation, the birth of Jesus, the pinnacle of the Christmas story that points forward to Easter, to this. That's the mission, that's what he's come for. And the second coming of Jesus is a very personal thing. It's into our lives and into our hearts. Come, Lord Jesus. And then the third coming, arrival of Jesus, the end of all things, or is it the remaking of all things? And the fact that he could come at any time, and the sense of, are we ready? Are we ready? Do we trust in the fact that the prophets foretold that he would come, and we see that at Christmas time, and they foretell also that he will come in power. Are we ready for that arrival? And so the Celts dwelt in these things, and we're just going to reflect on them for a moment. So John the Baptist, in the mold of the old prophets like Elijah, he had a ministry of preparation, prepare the way, prepare the way. And he goes around the countryside talking to people around, and he uses the words from Isaiah the prophet, a voice of one calling in the desert, prepare the way for the Lord, make straight paths for him. Make straight paths for him in your lives. Make straight paths for him in your thinking. Make straight paths for him in your heart. Don't put stuff in the way. Don't put stuff in the way. Fill in the valleys. Bring down the mountains. Make straight the roads. Make the rough ways smooth. Make it a direct route for him into your lives. And all mankind will see salvation. There's a great song. I mentioned it in the first one. It was playing, I think, on CD between the service. There's a great song written by Eric Bazillion. Some of you will remember it. Joan Osborne, I think, sang it. If God had a name, what would it be? And would you call it to his face? If you were faced with him in all his glory, what would you ask him if you had just one question? And if God had a face, what would it look like? And would you want to see it if seeing meant that you had to believe in things like heaven and Jesus, the saints and the prophets? God, one of us, vulnerable as a newborn child, vulnerable to all the risks, vulnerable to death. God, one of us, humbling himself, setting aside all that glory and status and power and authority, putting it all to one side and humbling himself into human form, coming quietly, miraculously, coming willingly, obediently, coming to heal, to serve, to redeem, to renew, to save, leaving behind so much. In James chapter 4, there's a lovely little verse. We're going to be looking at it next Sunday evening a bit more, I think. Come near to God. Draw near to God. Come near to God. And He'll draw near to you. Make space, make room, prepare the way. He's coming. Draw near to God. And He'll draw near to you. The Message translation of that verse is great. It's this. It says, say a quiet yes to God. Say yes to God. And He'll be there in no time. Say yes to God. When was the last time you said yes to God? When was the last time you just stilled yourself, came before God and said, whatever, yes. Yes, just give Him permission. Perhaps in the stillness you just need to do that now, just for a moment, just quietly come before God, close your eyes, whatever, and just say yes to Him again. Give Him permission. Open the door, let Him in. Yes to His plans and purposes, putting them ahead of yours. Yes. Yes to His lordship over your life. Have you taken back the throne? Is it time to give it back to Him? Yes to simply being still before Him and listening to what He's been trying to say to you. Yes. As we bring our thoughts towards bread and wine, some words from towards the end of Mark's Gospel, Mark chapter 15. And Mark writes this. He says that the sixth hour darkness came over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? And when some of those standing near heard this, they said, listen, he's calling Elijah. And one man ran and filled a sponge with wine vinegar and he put it on a stick and offered it to Jesus to drink. Now leave him alone. Let's see. Let's watch and see if Elijah comes to take him down. And with a loud cry, Jesus breathed his last. And as he did so, the curtain of the temple was torn in two. From top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood there in front of Jesus heard this cry and saw how he died, he said, surely this man was the Son of God. The curtain in the temple was torn in two. Because you see, in Jerusalem, in the capital city there, there's this, the temple, this huge stone structure that the equivalent in today's value, millions and millions of pounds have been spent building this and rebuilding this huge temple. And in this temple, there are the places where the priests make all the sacrifices and come before God. And right in the center, in the heart of this worship establishment, there's this special place. And it's the Holy of Holies. And we can't go in there. It's curtained off, it's set aside, and the only person who's allowed in there is the high priest. And he goes in there, and the expectation is that that's the holy place that's set apart. If God comes and appears to us, he will appear there. That's what we're expecting him to do. Like he did way back in the days of Solomon when he filled the temple with his glory. This is where he'll appear, and Jesus is dying on the cross, and as he gives up his last breath, the curtain is torn from top to bottom. And it's not just a curtain, it's thick, it's heavy, it's woven, it's thicker than quite an expensive carpet, and it weighs a lot, and it reaches right up to roughly the height of the ceiling, and it hangs there, and it tears down the middle. It is rent and ripped apart. And God is saying the Holy of Holies is not here anymore. If you're going to worship me, meet my son. Meet my son. He's come. And Mark, when he's writing his gospel, has used this word torn and rent in a very clever way. He's got it there right at the end of his gospel. And he also has it right at the beginning of his gospel as well. Because when Jesus is baptized and he goes down into the waters just as he's beginning his ministry, around about 30 years old, when he goes into the waters to be baptized by John, it says as he's coming up out of the water, he saw heaven being rent, torn open, the same word at the beginning and at the end of Mark's gospel. And he's given us a message. He's saying something remarkable is happening in this gospel of Jesus Christ, because heaven has been opened and heaven's coming down. God is about kingdom business. Prepare for the coming of the King. Prepare. And so that's what this is about. That's what Advent is about. It's about reminding ourselves of who we worship, who we follow, the purpose of this child and this nativity scene and this incarnation, this God coming down to earth. And it's remarkable, isn't it? Don't you think? It's remarkable. It really is. So I'm going to say a few words and we'll break bread and share wine together. I'll do it from up here, actually. Familiar words to all of you. Paul writes to the church in Corinth. For I received from the Lord what I also passed on to you. The Lord Jesus, on the night he was betrayed, he took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it, and he said, "This is my body, which is for you." And in the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it in remembrance of me. For when you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes." We believe in the priesthood of all believers. It's not about the Rev doing everything for you all. It's about ministry to one another. And you are free to break bread and to serve one another and to pray with one another and just to pray this preparation time into one another. The King is coming. The King is coming. Make straight ways for the King. So I'd encourage you now to just move around, spend the rest of the time together praying for one another, serving one another with bread and wine as you do so. If you're not entirely comfortable with that, just stay where you are, and I or some of the others in the church will come round and somebody will come and serve you with bread and wine and pray with you. Folks, let's bless one another.